This episode is in support of our Awe Experience, a weekend of rest and care created for busy leaders. If you're used to giving everything at work, your community, or to your family, this is an invitation to pause. The Awe Experience offers a special place to rest, reflect, and connect community with other women across Oregon. Learn more about the powerful weekend at womenfoundationoforegon.org/get involved. Click on the screen to reserve your spot because rest is a part of leadership. Rest is my zeal, it's recharging my brain.
Welcome to the Women's Foundation of Oregon podcast. This is a space for pause, for listening, for stories that remind us we are not broken, systems are. Here, we center rest as a foundation for justice and explore what becomes possible when awareness leads to well-being and well-being leads to empowerment. I'm Libra Ford, your executive director of the Women's Foundation of Oregon. Thank you for being here. Take a breath, because justice doesn't move forward without rest. Welcome. I'm not even going to start with who you are, because we're going to get to that. We're going to start with just a simple
little
question.
Little old me.
We're going to get to that, because we need to make sure people are settled in and they can hear who you are. But first, I want to know, who are you when you are rested?
Oh, when I'm rested, I'm a fun guy to be around. I think when I'm in my most rested space and self, I'm a fast processor. Mm-hmm. I'm a loving mother. I'm an inquisitive daughter. Mm-hmm. I'm present, mm-hmm. right? In my body and in my mind especially. Wow. And I think that's the place I like to be, when I'm rested in my mind. Not settled, because I don't think I'm ever settled. My great-grandmother keeps telling me, you know, be still, Candace, be still. I'm not still, but I'm settled in a way that is present and, you know, connected with the other people around me. When I'm rested, I use a lot of big words and analogies, right? I think when I'm rested, I can connect what I'm experiencing to a bunch of different stories and experiences. Mm-hmm. And that's where I think the storyteller in me comes out. Mm-hmm. So when I'm not rested, I'm go, 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 fast. Let's just task manager, right? Mm-hmm. So I like being in a place where I can pontificate. Mm.
The rested Candace sounds amazing.
She is. I like her. We kick it.
And that rested Candace sounds like, you know, leadership of movement and progress, right? And we need that. We need that Candace all the time.
Hey. Well, I think it's important for me to be able to find connections across the work, you know, with not only my staff, but with the community. Mm. Because when you start talking about things like tax policy and revenue and bill names and numbers,
put you to sleep.
Exactly. If I can't find my self-interest, how can I help somebody else find theirs?
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, yeah.
So now that we know who you are, rested, this brilliant leader that we need, tell me your name and what do you do and why what you do matters.
Well, I am Candace Williams, formerly Candace Vickers. I have my father's name now for the first time in my life, which is very exciting.
I love that.
My pronouns are she and her. I currently lead For All Families Oregon, formerly Family Forward. I'm just changing names everywhere right now. But we are FAFO now, mm-hmm. and we're an organization that looks to center the voices of moms and caregivers so that we can have a reimagined society that has care at the center. Mm-hmm. We know that Black and brown women have been taking care of everybody's babies for hundreds of years, mm-hmm. Most of the time for free, mm-hmm. most for a long time forced. Mm-hmm. But that didn't stop us from caring. And we know a society centered on care is radically transformed from the current patriarchal capitalistic system that we live in.
1,000%. The FAA.
You like that? FAFO.
I need that. I need it like big on the
chest. That's why I told her round two. I wanted across the
chest. Yes. And the fact that y'all are focused on, you know, obviously women and families and children, and that's what we see it.
Yes.
Let's go.
We like to say, you know, if they want to FA, they can FO. You know, like,
I love it.
Yeah,
the lawmaker. It did.
Actually, what's interesting, Libra, is we went through a full year-long rebrand process.
Okay.
We engaged all of our community partners, right? Mm-hmm. Women's Foundation was given the survey. Yeah. So were all of our leaders and a bunch of different community organizations. Mm-hmm. And our staff chewed on that, right? Chewed on everything that they heard. And we got some from the firm we were using. We got some offers of ideas of new names. But from a fully rested staff, we got FAFO, right? So the staff is the one that came up with the name. And I was like, okay,
I love it.
You better be ready to ride with me if that's how we're going down. You know.
Some people are going to get it.
Yeah. Yeah.
And the ones that's not rested, they're not going to get it. Until you do what it says.
Exactly.
I love it. So you also had the great opportunity to experience one of our experiences, which we call AWE.
Yes.
Last June, that was our first one. You trusted us. You showed up. And, you know, it was cool. But tell me about your experience there and what did it mean to you in terms of the work that you're doing?
I think for me, one, you know, I used to live in Detroit for a couple of years.
Okay.
And so I've driven across this country a couple of times, sometimes by myself, once with my then 15-year-old, which was an amazing amount of time, right, to have with your 15-year-old son who is getting ready to leave for college, right?
Wow.
Like, she's got to learn a lot about each other, right? So I've always found, you know, rest in that box that is the car, right? Mm-hmm. So I think I'm just going to start with that drive out to Sisters and how much that allowed me to just kind of pause, right?
Yeah.
I can't send text messages, can't talk on the phone, right? All I can do is look at what's around me and really just, you know, like, pontificate, to go there again, on what's happened to this land for this long before we even arrived, right? So just starting from a place of getting centered, right, I think was really powerful. But then to be in a room full of femme-identifying folks who are, you know, really trying to figure out how they can pick up power and wield it in a way that's different and, again, transformed, right, I think for me was really powerful. I got to sit back and listen. I think you saw me. I had my, you know, legs stretched out and I was just listening.
You sure did.
Right. Because I think there's moments where you can listen to people thinking and you get to learn a lot about, you know, your own processing and how it shows up different in different spaces. But it's also a place where you can create, even if, you know, I'm reading Rainbow, right? Building the castles in my mind and building those with bricks that are being laid by other people in the room, I think is where that collective power comes from.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's funny because I left that space and I have multiple people like, when are you running for office? And I'm like, that's not my journey, at least not yet. You know, that is not my ministry. Not yet, at least. But it was interesting to see how heavy words and heavy energy can land in a space where everybody's centered, right? And they're all coming together to talk about doing things differently.
Yeah, I love that. You did have your feet kicked back and it was definitely rested, Candace, because your analogies are beautiful.
Thank you.
I mean, you hit them and you had a few there that were like, man, that's brilliant. So I could see why people were like,
write it down.
But
because I won't remember.
Right. You won't remember. I get it. I feel the same way. I'm like, okay, I'm glad it worked for you.
Yeah.
Exactly. keep it for me.
Exactly.
But it's a brilliant place to be. And a lot of times people want you to do things that they feel are going to be impactful from that. So them asking you to be running for office, right? But you're in a very impactful position.
Exactly.
Now, right?
Exactly.
And I want to talk a little bit about the difference between making that choice, not to say you won't at some point, but staying present where you are now and still being impactful.
Yeah.
Speak about what that means to you and why that's important to you.
Well, you know, I often, when I talk about my story, I talk about standing on the shoulders of giants, right, throughout my entire experience and constantly being tapped on the shoulder. My mom used to say I was born with my fist in the air, right, sucking my thumb with my fist in the air. I just very justice minded from the beginning. So as I, you know, entered into the college and workspace, I was constantly thinking about what is the lever for change? Where is the place where I'll be able to make as big a mark on this sphere that we're all on together in a way that's going to make it better for my kids' kids, my cousins' kids, et cetera.
In our existence.
Right? And that's how I started in education, right? Like I started as a high school English teacher, right? You know, Dead Poets Society, Oh Captain, My Captain, right? Then I watched it after becoming an educator and was like, this is actually pretty problematic. just a little problematic. But, you know, I as soon as I started in education, I realized where they put all the black and brown babies, and it was in special education classes. And that's when I decided, well, maybe it's not the general education space. Maybe it's the special education space, and got tapped to move into special education. Okay. And then I got tapped by the amazing Charlene Williams, who is now the head of ODE, right, to come over to Roosevelt High School they were trying to reintegrate the school. And I was like, there it is. Right. Like bringing our communities back together in North Portland. That's the lever for change. Right. And she saw what I did with my little group. Right. My little group of 200 kids in special education. And she said, Candace, if you can do this with a classroom, imagine what you could do with a building. Right. I'm tapped. Right. I got tapped again. So on her shoulders, you know, went and became an administrator, thinking that would be the lever for change. Right. Did a lot with inclusion, took kids to China as a part of immersion programs. And then realized that, like, the higher up I moved in education, the more experience with policy I would get. The more I would be able to be involved in the person, like, that writes the words on the paper, which become, right, very biblical, right, very holy in an education sense. And then was tapped by an amazing superintendent to go to the National Superintendent's Academy, right? And so I was going to become a superintendent, Libra.
Okay, let's
That's
go.
Where I was headed, right?
Okay.
And as I went through the academy, I realized that, you know, maybe that wasn't my ministry, right? Like for a lot of folks who move into that level of educational leadership, you're really in a place where you're interpreting policy, right? You're implementing policy, but you're not necessarily changing it for the better, right? And so that's when my kid found, I said, you know, my kid was scrolling like they do. And I was like, Michael, find me a job. And Michael found Family Forward. It was like anti-racist, radical feminist, like mommy, do this.
Right.
Right. And I was in my doctoral program for policy. So I was like, this makes sense.
Right.
And now being in this place where I get to change whose voices are at the table when policies are being written, that feels truly transformational. To me, right? The black and brown women who've been taking care of us for so long, but who have never been allowed in those rooms to be the ones, you know, writing the rules, writing the Bible, right? Writing that thing that's held holy. Now being in that position to do that, to like bring them to the table, get out the way and just lift them up like that, that's impactful for me. And I don't know if for now, right? Like, because I'm finding my joy in my work. I don't know if there is another place that's more impactful than being in community organizing, right? Like, I mean, like, that's what it's about. That's a really transformed society.
I agree. Yeah. I mean, that is what it's about.
No shade to my superintendent.
Exactly. And no shade to people who run for office. Either,
exactly.
Right?
Exactly.
But I do think all things are needed at all times.
Takes all types.
And just because someone is brilliant in what they do, there's not one pathway for us to make sure that this happens. We need us everywhere, right?
We
need rested, brilliant Candace everywhere. Not just
if I could
run
duplicate myself. That's okay. My oldest claims that he's going to run for president.
There it
2044,
is. So you got your duplication right there.
There you go. Like he's on his way. Yes.
So you speak a lot about the work that you do and the fact that most policies impact women, kids, and families.
Yeah.
Right. And so you bringing them into spaces is really important and powerful. When you're doing this work, it's just a lot of energy and you got to bring a lot of people together. And there's a lot of people counting on you to be at your best. So talk to me a little bit about what gets in the way of us really seeing rested Candace those moments.
Well, I think one thing I've found through my leadership journey is there are a lot of spaces of anti-blackness, right? My amazing deputy director loves to say, everybody woke until they get a black boss.
That part.
Right?
But F-A-F-O.
But they get F-A and then F-O, right? And I think that's one thing, and it's not even necessarily the anti-blackness that I experience, but it's the anti-blackness that is the 1,000 daily cuts, the assault on my psyche, right? That pushes me to ask myself, is this a safe place? Is this a safe thing to say? Will I be able to stay in if I, you know, push folks harder, right, than they're used to being pushed? And a lot of times that's what I think gets in my way, right? It's not necessarily the people who are engaged in the anti-blackness, because I'm used to that. Sadly, right? Like I'm ready to capture that and hold that and help them, you know, mindfully work through that, through, you know, we're going to dig into that iceberg. But it's my own, right, interpretation of where safety is and isn't that can sometimes make my shoulders get up to my ears, right? And that's the thing that I think I have to constantly battle, that, like, I am powerful, right? I am very powerful. I am very strong. And I will be held by community. And that is a belief that is really hard to hold fast to in a world, right, that's constantly telling you the opposite.
That's right.
Right? So, yeah, I think that's one of the biggest things that gets in the way, right?
Yeah, I'm with you on that. I love the way you articulated it. I think a lot of times when you are unsafe in silent ways, especially in a country or a city or a state, wherever the level is. But for us as black women, it's a country thing, right?
Yep.
Like it hasn't really loved us well.
It's even on our own block.
On our own block.
Yeah.
So it's really hard to see yourself as being safe a lot of the times in a day. So you're constantly elevating yourself. But that itself is exhausting. That is work. And then at the same time that you're doing that, like you're showing up full and you're also like,
Exactly. I'm showing up as full as I can reflecting on, like, you know, did I drown them a little bit with that big cup of water?
And
you know,
the second that we're not completely full, people are like, you all right? And you're like, actually, I have not been all right.
Yeah,
but
right.
Thanks for asking today.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I'm sorry if I seemed all right to you all those other times, or that today you're looking.
Right.
Yeah,
exactly.
Right?
Yeah, I appreciate you noticing today.
Exactly.
It's been a lifetime for me and my ancestors. Right?
Exactly.
And I think we do really well in the community, especially as black women, but women in general, kind of masking that. But we also have this new generation that's naming it beautifully.
Yes.
Right. And I just want to give space to them and say, keep naming it.
Yes.
Because you're giving us power, right? You're giving us energy. You're giving us the things that we haven't had, the words, right?
Yes.
And the permission.
And so, that's the society that we want, right?
Yes.
I think the whole goal is to flip it, right? And I think I learned the most from my youngest, right? Michael. An amazing, you know, trans activist at 16 years old who, you know, will constantly center mental health and what is needed, not only for him, but for me in a space. Yeah. Right. And will still come and, like, sit on my lap.
Yeah.
Right. If he needs a minute. And I think about the vulnerability that implies at that age when you're taught to be so invulnerable. Right.
Yes.
They're supposed to be hard. You know, they're 16. And to see him, like, just constantly shed. Right. Who he is on every room that he goes into and leave a little piece there. I ask myself, like, what right do I have not to leave a little piece of me in spaces? Yeah.
And I want to give us some credit. Right. Because I think every generation leads us closer to what we want to see.
Oh, yeah. He wouldn't be awesome without me.
I want to be clear about that, too. Like, we're a part of this.
Those kids are amazing because of me. Let's be very clear.
I'm with you. I'm taking all the credit I can get. That's right.
I got into Tuskegee, damn it.
Exactly. We here together.
Don't tell Charlie. You know, like, mommy did that. Yeah.
I love that so much. And it's empowering to see it, right? Because, I mean, even, like, my youngest is this powerful athlete. She presents herself very strong, but she's also super sensitive. She had a brilliant game last night, and I'm so proud of her. Her team did great, and she had a brilliant, like, game winner. She's so strong at the buzzer. And the first thing she did was run up the bleachers in tears to me. And I said, I'm not proud of you because of that shot. I'm proud of you because whatever you're feeling, you're like, I'm not hiding it.
Exactly.
is the moment that we're in. And that is so, and it's our ancestors that have helped us get to this point, right? That those years that they were in the cotton fields and not shedding one emotion. And now for an individual youth to be like, I'm going to shed every emotion because I can.
And I mean, you talk about each generation getting better. I mean, I don't know about you, but I was very much raised with the, like, never let them see you sleep. Never let them see you cry. You know what I mean? And Dr. DeGroy, right? Post-traumatic slave syndrome, right? Like, the publishing of that book alone. Like, allowed, I think, some of us in our generation to really reflect on what we were attempting to pass down. And I think now, like, seeing the fruits of our labor from these youth who are unapologetically and unmonolithically little black babies, I think is extremely powerful.
It is so powerful.
And if my baby can do that, then
why can't I?
Yeah,
it's great permission. So I want to close us out with some deep conversation. We at Women's Foundation of Oregon, we believe dreaming is data. And like we were talking about the youth, they're dreaming. And
yes,
I love
they are.
It. And we as adults need to do more of that because dreaming can shape the justice that we want to see. So my question to you is, what is your boldest dream for Oregon?
Well, I'm going to go to what Oregon was created as, right? Like, this was created as a white utopia after the Civil War, during the time, the Troubles, right? We'll call
the
it the
Troubles.
And it was created as a place for white folks in the South who did not want to see the enfranchisement of black folks to escape to, right? So there's a lot of things in our Constitution and our policies, our local charters, that are set up to be very utopic, right? And now, right, like, we've been here. Like, let's be clear, we've been here. But now that we're here and we're making noise, there's attempts to take some of that utopia away from the black and brown voices that are here. My biggest dream for Oregon is that it becomes that Pacific Northwest utopia for all of its citizens.
I love that.
Right? For all families. Right? And I think that requires, I mean, we think about, like, that myth of the zero sum, right? Like, if I give you some, I'm going to lose out on some. It's enough for all of us. Enough for all of us. But if we really pause and said, you know, this state was created to be the best version of a state in this country, but just for a group of people, and asked ourselves, what would it mean for it to be the best state for all of the people that are here? And what kinds of ways would our policies switch up and change to make it to where all folks here felt as though they had escape to the great tree-filled spaces with, you know, an hour away from the ocean, an hour away from the desert, an hour away from
the typical Oregon story.
You know what I mean? Like, what would it look like if we really saw this as, you know, the place for folks to come and really experience the type of prosperity that they want to experience? And I think one thing we learn from the black and brown women who have been running our society from the background since folks landed here, right? I think one thing that we learned from them is the best way to have that utopia, to, like, be in right community, is to be centered on care, right? What would it look like to have a state where nobody was worried about whether or not they would be cared for at any juncture in their life? Because we're all going to need care. What would it look like to have a state that, like, nobody worried about whether or not they were going to get access to gender affirming care or reproductive care or child care or elderly care. Like, I know that's taken care of for me here. And when I know that, right, like you asked me in the very beginning, right, then we're going to get the most rested Oregonians possible. So we're going to get even more amazingness out of them, because that's one thing that they don't have to worry about. I know I'm cared for here. Right. And that's what this state has always attempted to be, just for a small group. Right. So what would it look like if it was for all of
everybody,
us?
Everybody. Mm-hmm. I love that. So your dream is abundance for all and care for all.
Exactly.
And that's
abundance
where
is care.
Like, yeah. Abundance is care.
And I don't need the money. I need the food.
That part. That part.
Yes, and but we also need the money. Yes.
It's a brilliant dream, and it's possible.
It is.
Right? And it's like, how do we help people move towards that instead of in these fragment areas
exactly.
that aren't really getting us to that end goal, right? I love what you said. I love what you always say.
Thank you.
I hope that you're always rested.
I work on it.
Because you're brilliant either way, but rested Candace
she's
is what
awesome.
We need.
Yeah, we like her.
She's
yeah.
awesome.
Yeah.
I am so happy you've come to spend time with us today.
Absolutely.
It's been a brilliant moment for me.
Me too. Yeah, I mean, I just got to kick it with Libra.
And she brought me a shirt.
Yes.
Even
yes.
though I want the...
You want the hoodie? You need the hoodie?
I'll
text Ashley as soon as we leave.
I'm the F-bomb queen.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I'm going to say what it is, but you know. F-bombs, they feel good. They help
do.
Me rest.
They do. Yes. Yes.
So with that being said, this is it. Is there anything else you want to say before we get out of here?
Just how important it is for us to stay in right community and coalitions with each other, right? Like, one thing that we're known about nationally, you know, as a state, is Oregon can bring together coalitions.
That's true.
We can bring together different communities who will sit at the table saying the same thing. And we need to make sure that that, you know, is a feather in our cap that we continue to celebrate. So staying in community with each other, working through the conflict, taking care of each other. I think that's where we're going to really change the world.
I love it. You heard it from her. Thank you, my dear.
Thank you.
It's always good to see you.
Yes.
As we close, we invite you to carry this conversation with you. Not as something to fix, but something to sit with. Rest is not separate from justice. It is how we sustain it. May you leave this episode with permission to pause, to listen inward, and to honor what your body and spirit are asking for next. Thank you for spending this time with us. Until next time, be gentle to yourself, stay grounded, and remember, rest is not a reward or luxury. It is justice.
Before we close, I want to give a moment just to invite you to join the journey. This show exists because of the shared commitment to thoughtful dialogue, rest, care, and the community. And when you join the journey, you're helping us sustain space where we can help showing others. Your support goes directly into creating episodes, amplifying voices, and building a podcast that reflects the values we talk about here. If this show has ever helped you slow down, think differently, or feel free, less alone, join the journey. Love this podcast? You can support it by joining the journey or partnering with us by sponsoring this show. Visit womenfoundationoforegon.org and learn more. Thank you for being a part of the community.
So this episode was really about rest and the power of rest and how much we really need it. And I want us to really think about rest from a context of when we look at the phone and we see that our phone is dying, we kind of panic, right? And when it gets to that red little area and we know that we're under 5%, because wherever we are in that moment, we know more than likely that phone is not going to be accessible to us anymore. So we often carry portable chargers. We carry things to make sure that those phones keep going. But think about that in your life. What if you could see your nervous system as a charging system? And sometime in your life, that charging level gets below 5% and it's in the red. How would you feel about that being your existence? We have to remember that rest is not a reward. It's a way for us to charge ourselves back up. It is our charging system. Rest is not quitting. Rest is not maintenance. Rest is strategy. And rest is absolutely resistance. So I have one ask of you. And this is not a hard ask. It's not for you to do more and exist more in life and bigger, but more for yourself. I want you to give yourself a score. Where are you sitting in terms of your self-battery on a scale of 1 to 10? If you are noticeably below a 6, I want you to negotiate with yourself. How can you spend more time on recharging that battery? Maybe you don't scroll as much today. Maybe you're a little bit more productive in taking a bath and resting. Whatever it takes to restore, do that. And let's get your charger way up to 100%. Super excited that you guys joined us today. And remember, rest is not a reward. It's something you deserve.